Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia, Solartopia, Solartopia.
Hey, everybody, that was the beautiful Dar Williams with Pete Seeger and David Burns, the Solartopia song. We are back with our regular show. We are taking 2 weeks off from our Zoom calls on Grassroots Election Protection Coalition. And we've got a wonderful show today on homelessness with two truly tremendous players in the field. Donald Whitehead. Donald, are you with us?
I am with you.
All right. It's great to have you on. And Joel Siegel, who's been a frequent guest and a major player in the homeless issue as well. Joel, are you right there?
Yeah. Hey, how you doing, Harvey? Honored to be on with one of the greatest champions for the homeless, Donald Whitehead.
Well, listen, Joel, I would like you, if you would, because you and Donald are longtime co-conspirators, I would like you to lay out the field for us on the homeless issue. I know a fair amount, but nowhere near what you guys know. You are certainly the great experts. And Joel, I'm going to ask you if you would, Joel Siegel, a former staffer with John Conyers, godfather of the Affordable Care Act and so much else, one of the great activists and political geniuses in American politics today, and my co-convener of the Grassroots Emergency Election Protection Coalition. As I say, we have been running the recordings of those Zoom calls, which are so important here on this SWAT. But this week and next week, we are going to be doing our regular shows, and today's the homeless. If you need to get in touch with me as to how to get on the Grassroots Emergency Election Protection Zoom calls, which we hold on Mondays at 5 p.m., email me directly at solartopia@gmail. That's solartopia@gmail. And we are certainly up against it with a national Jim Crow assault on voting rights, the filibuster, gerrymandering, the Electoral College, so much else. So contact me, solartopia@gmail. As I say, in 2 weeks, we'll resume our Zoom calls. But today, we're going to be dealing with homelessness, and with the great Joel Siegel is with us, and he's going to introduce Donald Whitehead, and we'll have the full hour show on homelessness. So, Joel Siegel, if you will take it away from Charlotte, North Carolina, please. We're glad to have you on.
I'm honored to be here. And well, today really marks a moment in history that I hope people will actually remember, you know, this date. The reason why is because there's going to be a historical launch of the movement and homelessness and poverty that Donald Whitehead, the executive director of the National Coalition for the Homeless, is the architect of this strategy. And we don't think that there should be, you know, 7 million homeless in this country, thousands and thousands of people living in tents, you know, in Los Angeles and across the country. Can you imagine we've gone from a country where we used to have home ownership and we devolved into such moral depravity that the homeless shelter has become the affordable housing of this nation and tents. It's just hard to imagine that. And just 3 or 4 quick facts, and then, you know, I'll throw it back to you. And that's in between 81 and 85, President Ronald Reagan cut the HUD housing budget by $80 billion. And he literally starved cities and towns across the country for, you know, money for affordable housing production. So where I live in Charlotte, North Carolina, we used to have what was called scattered site public housing. We didn't have the money for it. They quit building it. You know, number two, there was the war on drugs that went all the way from Reagan to the, you know, Clinton to the Bushes. And, you know, untold, mainly African-American men went to prison on drug charges that they should have never went to prison on, and they were dumped into the streets with no housing, filling up our homeless shelters. Ronald Reagan did what was called deinstitutionalization, letting untold amount of people who were in psychiatric facilities, right, onto the streets. And, you know, and the Clinton welfare reform has created a huge perfect storm of homelessness, of which we've never imagined, traumatizing millions of people, and we want to end this this calamity.
Well, we certainly do.
Yes.
Joe, are you still with us?
Yeah.
Yeah, so how are we going to do it? And if you'll introduce Donald Whitehead into this mix, we'll proceed with the conversation. But I'm in Los Angeles. There are 60,000 homeless people in Los Angeles. There are entire encampments here. They, you know, there's just an endless debate. There's a ton of money that needs to be spent. And, you know, what Reagan did was catastrophic and continues. And we still haven't got an answer for the problem. I mean, right now, the housing market in America is through the roof. There's not enough housing even for people who have money. So, you know, this is a terrible situation, and something's got to be done. So tell us, Joel Siegel and Donald Whitehead, what we're going to do.
Yeah, I'm going to introduce Donald. We're short 7 million housing units for low-income people. Where I live, we're probably at the bottom in terms of people under, you know, 30% of poverty. Most who cannot even afford an apartment because, you know, their wages are just much too, you know, small where I live. You can't live on a starvation wage. So a lot of people are priced out of the private market. Therefore, we are organizing a 21st century, you know, civil rights movement where we want housing to be a basic, fundamental, universal human right. We want everyone who wants a job, you know, to get a job. And we're launching this campaign to make sure that if federal legislation is introduced to end homelessness, create jobs and child care, education, health care. And Donald Whitehead, who, in my opinion, is the fiercest, most effective advocate in the nation, is leading this effort. I'm honored to be a board member of the National Coalition for the Homeless. Donald, you want to take it from here?
Sure, Joel, and thank you for that gracious introduction. I would say we're equally as fierce and compassionate and energetic about the issue of homelessness. I couldn't have started to do anything if it wasn't for your partnership on the Hill. So I truly appreciate that. And Harvey, thank you for the opportunity to talk about homelessness. And Joel laid out a lot of what happened years ago to get us down this path that has continued on for 40 plus years. This actually is the longest period of continued homelessness in the history of the country. I mean, we've always had homelessness, but we haven't had this sustained period of homelessness without a federal response, and that's what we're lacking. Instead, what we've had is the alternate. We've had a federal government who basically ignored the issue, exacerbated the issue in many ways. Another really fundamental issue that has caused the growth of homelessness in this country are things that happened even before Reagan. We can point all the way back to the 1930s and the redlining that occurred in the country that depressed so many low-income minority communities. In addition to some of the statistics you've heard, homelessness disproportionately affects African Americans and Native Americans, but all minorities, but those two in particular. 40% of the homeless population are African Americans, where the actual population of the country is only 13%. So in addition to all of the things Joel talked about that we need to do, we also need to combat the continuing issues of structural racism in our country. So we have a lot of work to do. We have to address poverty. It's tragic that we couldn't even pass a $15 minimum wage, which isn't enough in most communities. In fact, there's only two communities in the entire country where you can work a minimum wage job and actually be able to afford housing at what the government says you should pay of your income to pay for housing, which is about 30%. Only two places you can work minimum wage and do that in a one-bedroom, and zero places you can do that if you need a two-bedroom unit or higher. So we have a lot of work to do, but we think we have the campaign to do it. And I'm really happy to have Joel and Christian Nunes from NOW and other people that will be helping us with that campaign.
Well, Donald, tell us exactly what the campaign is and how people can get involved. We got a fair amount of time here, and if you'll discuss the structure and the general plan to end homelessness, that would be really great, Donald Whitehead.
So the plan focuses on five pillars. And so one is housing. Absolutely, the lack of housing is one of the two largest underlying causes of homelessness. We're going to address poverty through employment. We're also going to be promoting what we've seen as effective across the country, and that's universal guaranteed incomes. So we want to bring that to scale. We want to look at the infrastructure plan that's underway and get homeless people involved in some of the employment that's going to come from infrastructure. We're going to work on health care issues. There's huge health disparities. That's been exposed by the COVID epidemic. We already knew that there was disparities, but we really see kind of upfront and personal how deep those disparities are. And so we need to challenge that by we want to ensure that there is Medicaid for all and a single-payer system in our country. That's what we're pushing for in the healthcare arena. We also want to work on education. Education is a critical issue. There is the school to prison pipeline that must be addressed. There's also the number of homeless children in this country, which actually appears to be somewhere in the neighborhood of 1.35 million. So we want to really work hard to create the resources for the families that are out there. And kind of in between that is also those children being leaving the foster care system, being discharged from that system. So we need to really work on that. We're also going to work on a process that guarantees placement for people being discharged from all of the institutions, whether it's prison or the foster care system or the mental health care system. Most of those people are ending up on the streets in our country or even worse, in jails because they don't we don't have adequate housing after deinstitutionalization that Joel talked about, to be able to create the resources for people with mental health issues. So it really starts with the production of housing, which has ceased for low-income people. You probably would be surprised to know that there is a prohibition to creating public housing in this country called the Faircloth Amendment. We need to restart that process. And we're not talking about the huge sky rises that they had in Chicago. We're talking about a more environmentally friendly, more safe four-story walk-ups, which were the original design for public housing. We need to get back to that. And we also need to make sure that all of this production is done with environmental impacts as a part of the process. We can't continue to put low-income people in harm's way by putting them around industrial factories or in places where they can't even drink the water. So all of those are part of the campaign. More details to come. We actually haven't officially launched yet, but we want to kind of get people encouraged to be part of it. And if you become a member of the National Coalition for the Homeless, that's the best way to be involved in the campaign. But if you contact me or Joel, we'll let you know exactly when we're right now in the building stages to make sure we have the infrastructure in place. And in April, we're going to have our official launch. And more will be revealed about how you can actually be involved in the campaign.
So how can people get a hold of you and Joel and the campaign?
So easiest way is go ahead, Joel.
No, Don, you go ahead. I was thinking you could give the website, and I could give them my email, too.
So So there will be a campaign website, but that's under development. But you can go directly to the National Coalition for the Homeless, and that's www.nationalhomeless.org. You can also email info@nationalhomeless.org, and they will forward the message to either me or Joel. Or you can call directly at 202-462-4822. That's the office. And either email or call, and you'll be directed to me or Joel.
And Joel, you have an email you want to give?
Yeah, my email is Joel, J-O-E-L, dot R, dot Siegel, S-E-G-A-L, at gmail.com. I want to say that Dot and I led an effort in the U.S. Congress when I was working for Mr. Conyers in early 2000 called the Bring America Home campaign. You know, I witnessed Donald and his magic. I think we had like a 23-state campaign. The basis of our movement will be a series of very progressive legislation. It'll be as big as the New Deal or the Great Society. We want to go big as activists. We want everybody across the country. Once the campaign begins, it's officially launched, there will be legislation of which no one has ever seen before. Dot and I have been drafting it along with other NGOs and other experts across the country. We want to get this passed. We know we have 2 years to get it passed. We will get it passed. And we want to be really encourage people to do town hall meetings, which I know JAMN, my organization, Justice Action Mobilization Network, we already have one planned for April the 27th in Charlotte, North Carolina. We're going to encourage people who are homeless or were formerly homeless to speak at the town hall meetings to get people to understand, especially elected officials, that we want them to sign on to our bills. This is the JAMN idea. Give people who are going through homelessness a chance to speak to elected officials and interfaith leaders. This is going to have to be, 435 congressional districts because there's homelessness everywhere in 50 states. And we want this legislation passed as soon as possible. And, we're doing this again. And under the leadership of Donald Whitehead, he's a very humble person, but Donald and I were both formerly homeless. We both ran homeless shelters. This is something that he and I have been working on for over 21 years. And we and the rest of the country, we're going to get this done. We're going to end homelessness in America. Now, people say, well, you can't end homelessness. What about those who want to be homeless? That's a very small, teeny tiny, infinitesimally small category. The majority of people don't want to live in a shelter. And would any of your listeners want to live in a shelter or a tent? I don't think so.
No. So what is the, Donald, you mentioned the Faircloth Amendment. What is the Faircloth Amendment?
So it was an amendment that was created to prohibit the construction of new public housing.
And, why? Why would anybody do that? Is this in the Senate? Did this come through the Senate?
It passed both houses. So it was an amendment to one of the HUD budgets that actually prohibits right now the production of public housing. And so that's something that has to be eliminated.
When was this passed?
The year I don't have in front of me. I believe it was in the mid-2000s. Now, part of it
Bush?
Was
this under George W. Bush?
Yes. But part of the issue with the Faircloth Amendment was there were some challenges, of course, with public housing. If you think back to the 90s, the late 80s, the high-rise public housing in New York and Chicago and other places that had some real problems around it, drug trafficking, violence, gang violence, all kinds of assaults. The design was horrible. A lot of public housing right now, even the ones that aren't that super high-rise model, have tons of maintenance issues. And so one of the things that has to happen first, even before production, is just to clean up the public housing that we have now. And the public housing legislation that allows for the repairs is really, really far behind. And so that's the other piece we need to do. We need to repair what we have and create more.
It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable that the Congress, to me, that anybody would pass a bill banning the construction of public housing. I mean, here in Los Angeles, you have tremendous tension in the streets. People living under bridges, tents everywhere, and of course, people get angry at the homeless. You know, they blame people for being homeless. And you hear people saying stuff like, oh, that's how they want to live. And, you know, it's absolutely outrageous. And Joel's historical background there was, you know, exceptional and essential. I mean, I remember in the 60s when Kennedy and Johnson were building public housing. Now, the public housing that they built, you know, the infamous Cabrini Green in Chicago, these high rises. We'll talk about them, please, Joel and Donald. Tell us what the history has been with the high-rises.
And, Harvey, real quick before Joe answers that, it was actually passed in 1998. I thought it was a little bit later, but it was passed in 1998.
Clinton
research
signed
it. Amendment. Yeah.
So Clinton signed that.
It must have been under that administration. There was also another little bill during that time called welfare reform that has created great challenges. So Joel, if you want to jump in about public housing.
Sure. The history of public housing under Johnson was, and even Kennedy, they really recruited mainly people from the Ivy League schools, and they decided to come up with, you know, public housing, and the model that they used, I don't think they included, like, black community leaders or black architects or black elected officials. I think they superimposed this idea of huge housing projects, and that, you know, a lot of people, like, you know, Coach John Thompson, who grew up in projects, you know, said, hey, look, it was better than being in a homeless shelter and it fostered community, but later, as jobs went overseas and a lot of businesses in the black community went out to the suburbs, you know, what happened was there were what are called ghetto tracts, and that's where concentrations of very, very poor, mainly black people got into these programs, and Cabrini Green probably being one of the worst. Where I live, it was called Earl Village. Many cities decided, like in the 80s and the 90s, that it would be best to have what's called scattered site public housing. I was a part of that movement in leadership when I worked for the Charlotte City Council on housing. And there would be like 6 or 7 apartment complex, maybe, you know, 4 or 5 stories high. And they put the public housing near transportation lines and shopping, an unbelievably successful model. The only problem was a lot of people in public housing never had access to childcare, never had access to bus tickets, never had access, you know, to what you need to be self-sufficient. So public housing was supposed to be temporary. It was never supposed to be permanent. But what happened was there was never a real sincere attempt by elected officials or even Congress to get people into homes or really nice apartments. All that being said, there's public housing that's scattered site. There's nonprofit housing that's very successful. But right now, putting people in tents and shelters are Band-Aids and cruel, inhumane. And we should really sue the federal government for a human rights violation, because I ran these shelters for many years, and they're run like minimum security prisons. Many of the people who go into the shelters, especially women and children, are traumatized. Many of them get molested, the women. I've dealt with more and more people who cannot stand these shelters. They don't get treated right. Often they don't have social services offered to them. Thank God for them. But that's not what America is about. Everyone should have a right to housing, job, and child care and services. We want to equal the playing field. and poverty as we know it. Donald?
All of what you said, the only thing Joel and I will ever disagree on is that we don't necessarily disagree that people, there is a voluntary homeless population. I've never heard anyone who wanted to be homeless, but Joel is right. I have heard people that say they don't want to be in shelters. And, you know, what's clear, and one of the takeaways I think everybody, I hope, gets from this call is that shelters are not housing. And many of them are, as Joel said, they're operated in ways that are inhuman. Some of the same things that caused Kennedy, who originally talked about deinstitutionalization, to do it. It's just the conditions are not suitable for anybody in America. Now, the public housing, you know, back to that really quick. Again, that was 1998, I just recalled. But the other big thing about public housing is right now our public housing stock is deteriorating. And there is a $70 billion backlog in repairs to public housing. And I'll say that again. There's a $70 billion backlog in repairs to public housing. So just if you put that into context and think about the living conditions that people are probably dealing with in a housing stock that was built in the 30s and 40s without those repairs, it is unfathomable in the United States. That Faircloth Amendment was introduced by Senator Faircloth from North Carolina, who that provision says that the public housing stock in 1998, the government can't spend more than that. So to understand it, the housing dollars that were used for public housing in 1998, that's where we still are in terms of repairs, in terms of production for public housing. And so that's why we haven't continued to keep pace with the growing population. Only 40 out of 100 people who are eligible for subsidized housing because of their income actually get it. You know, we have waiting lists that are tens of thousands and years long in some of our biggest cities. L.A. has money for housing, as you talked about. But the other thing, we talked about this a little more, is the NIMBYism that exists in this country. That's why after deinstitutionalization, we didn't get housing for people with mental health issues because communities would not allow that kind of housing to be built in their community. We don't have redlining anymore. We don't have restricted covenants, maybe. By law, we don't have those, but they still exist. Now they're called zoning laws. And that's what officials in Los Angeles ran up against when they allocated dollars to start to create housing for homeless people. Because of the numbers, they ran into many, many communities that do not allow multi-unit housing in their communities. And it is a shame. And really, the fundamental issue is that people don't care about each other anymore. It's what about me-ism is on steroids. And it's why you see McDonald's and Walmart at the forefront of a fight to not pay minimum wages when those companies make extraordinary amounts of money, but they don't want to pay a livable wage in this country. And so people are so
You're breaking up on me, Donald.
I'm sorry.
See if you can. That's all right. It's absolutely horrifying. I mean, here we have a situation where this guy Bezos from Amazon has about $150 billion. It's unfathomable how much money this one guy has. It's more money than a lot of countries in the world. He just bought an estate in Los Angeles. It's like, you know, two city blocks. It's absolutely sickening. And he's fighting unionization in Amazon. I have a friend at Amazon. I have a friend who worked at Amazon, and he said it was like slavery. They watch your every move. And he had a friend
who died on the floor at Amazon from a heart attack, and they didn't treat him. He died because he couldn't get treatment right there on the floor of Amazon. And then you have people yelling at the homeless because for whatever reason, it's just a terrible thing to say about our country and about our species, frankly, the human race. We just suffered through an abomination in the White House. At least it appears that the Biden administration is trying to do something about some of this stuff. But, Joel, as you and I have talked about, we have Mitch McConnell in the Senate with the filibuster. So how are we going to proceed now? Is this a situation where we have to get bills through the Congress to fund more public housing and to fix what we got? What is the big picture strategy here, Joel?
That's the big picture strategy. It's the Martin Luther King strategy, civil rights movement strategy. Introduce a progressive piece of legislation, go big. That's one thing I love about Donald Whitehead. He never talks about incremental reforms. Donald always talks about ending homelessness. And I agree with Donald. I probably have met only maybe two people out of the thousands of people that I've ever worked with. One was very young. But most of them are mentally ill, and they just can't make decisions for themselves in terms of where they're going to live. So I agree with Donald's analysis. Nevertheless, we're going to have that conversation when it arises. I think with something like housing, whenever you're dealing with anything dealing with a number affixed to it, like the cost of a housing bill, you can pass a bill usually by budget reconciliation. So a simple majority vote. If the filibuster is used against these bills, then we're going to have to visit the filibuster. I of course, believe it must be eliminated. It's the tyranny of the minority against the minority of people who are having their rights taken away by the minority that doesn't have control of the Congress. But yes, it's going to be legislation that will be introduced. We're going to have a mass movement in the streets and in the suites, get the bills passed. And, if we know that there is a lack of 7 million housing units, I'm not speaking for Donald or the National Coalition for the Homeless. I'm just saying that if we're lacking 7 million housing units, then we need to build 7 million housing units. I've often talked to Donald, and asked Donald, how many people do you think are homeless? And he would say, the HUD formulation that they use for homelessness is inaccurate. In fact, that's going to hopefully be one of the bills that we introduce. Donald would always say it's closer to 7 million. I think he's correct. Sometimes they'll say 3.4 million homeless people, 1.3 million children. I do think it's closer to 7 million because the HUD count doesn't include often the hidden homeless, which we know even since COVID has skyrocketed. But without a mass movement, it is going to be challenging to get the bills passed. That's why we're organizing this big campaign to end homelessness. So we have so much power. And I experienced that when Conyers and others were leading the single-payer movement, which led to the patch of Obamacare. I know what it's like to win. Donald knows what it's like to win. And we're using our years and years of experience winning in Congress to get these bills passed through the House and Senate signed by Biden. And we have an ally in Biden. We have 2 years, basically, with we are a nonpartisan group, and I'm just saying in terms of how I see it, we have a House and Senate, which is majority Democrat. This is the chance to end homelessness. We can't do it without all your listeners participating and being serious about this. Everyone should have a right to housing, period. That simple.
How much money is required, and is there an infrastructure ready to actually build these houses? If you want to build 7 million single family homes, is that what we're looking at, or what kind of mix are we looking at? How much money will it require, and who's going to build these homes? There's three small questions for you.
As an executive director of JAM, and his mission is 100% clean, renewable energy and ending poverty and homelessness. Not necessarily homes, but it remains to be seen what communities across the country want. I think communities across the country should come up with their own plans to how they want to end homelessness, send it, that plan to HUD, and then have HUD give the money to cities and towns to do it. I would think that a lot of the money needs to go to transitional housing with services, then permanent housing, apartments. But home ownership, of course, there's got to be a pathway to that. But given the economies of scale, I would say a lot of the housing most likely would be apartments with wraparound services. In terms of cost, Maxine Waters did an incredible briefing that I was at a few years ago. Maxine Waters was saying it was about $20 billion to provide housing for everyone, and she said it was the cost of two battleships. If it's housing, child care, transportation, and job programs, I think it'd be more expensive, maybe $70, $80 billion. But it's certainly, easy to afford. We got plenty of money. We just don't have the political will yet, but we're going to garner that in this campaign. I mean, I'll close by saying a transaction tax on stock and bond transactions between the seller and the buyer, 50 cents on the seller buyer over $100 gets you $350 billion right there. So getting the money for this is not a problem. That's easy. It's can we get the political will to get the bills passed? And I think we'll get a lot of Republican support because a lot of Republicans actually support housing and a path to economic independence, a job and housing. That was my experience in North Carolina.
Donald, go ahead.
No, you. I don't want to interrupt. I'm sorry. You go ahead.
No, Donald. What number are we talking about? Is $20 billion enough to solve the homeless crisis in this country?
No. I don't think $20 billion is enough. I think the upper number that Joe talked about, when we scored the Bring America Home Act, it was $81 billion. But that included income support and issues around criminalization and changes to Social Security. So that was huge. So I think it's somewhere in between the $70 and $81 billion is my guess. Some of the production vehicles alone, like the Affordable Housing Trust Fund, we're hoping that we can get $45 billion for that alone. That is targeted to the very low-income population, because affordable housing means different things to different people. And when we talk about affordable housing, we're talking about the very bottom of the economic ladder, people that are under 30% of area median income. So the trust fund doesn't require federal funds. It's FHA and – I'm sorry, it's Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac resources, and there's actually a surplus in that particular fund right now. So that wouldn't require dollars that come from the federal government or the federal government administering the program. $45 billion in that program would give local control. It'd come in the form of a block grant. And any developer that's interested would be able to create that housing. So what we're hoping is that what's happening right now, housing is happening right now. So in the CARES Act, the new relief package, there's actually $25 billion for housing development. So we are already ramping up housing development in the country as we speak. So those dollars will have to be transformed into housing units. And so there's some very creative ways communities are doing that. Communities are buying hotels, for instance, using that as affordable housing. They're using tiny homes. They're doing social housing. So not all of that housing has to be built. Some of it's already in existence. The other process is through rehabbing and repurposing buildings that have been dormant and vacant for long periods of time. So there's a development side, there's a redevelopment side, and then there's also a repurposing side that'll happen. We think that the infrastructure is already in place. People are doing this every day. We just have to get some of those for-profit developers who are, I see cranes and construction equipment in every city I go in the United States. So there's no shortage of housing being developed. It's only that it's being developed for people at the top and not the people that are really in need of supportive housing. So the majority of it will be rental housing, but one of the beauties of the National National Housing Trust Fund, is it was originally called the National Affordable Housing, but it's now the National Housing Trust Fund, is that 90% of that goes into rental housing, but another 10% can be used to do home ownership. So the ultimate vehicle that helps everybody and does not require administration by the federal government.
Wow. I mean, to me, when I hear $80 billion, that sounds like a completely achievable number. I mean, it's a lot less than I would have thought. If you really think that you can deal with the housing crisis in this country for under $100 billion, that sounds like a bargain to me, especially, given the fact that we have this insane defense budget, which is completely out of control. I mean, we have a military that's perfectly designed to defeat the Soviet Union in 1985 and has no relevance to today's situation, and they're spending all this money on two battleships. Absolutely. It's amazing to me the number is that small, but if that's what you think. I'm curious, by the way, these tiny houses, do people like them? Are they successful?
The communities that have, gone all in and put enough dollars into that program to bring it to scale, there's some phenomenal successes. There's a huge tiny home village in Austin, Texas. There's one being created right now in the Twin Cities in Minnesota. So they are working really well in the communities, and they're for people that, just need protection from the elements and may not be able to handle a bigger house. And they're also more cost-effective than building a multi-unit building. So they are working. There's so many vehicles. There's so much that can be done to create housing, and we've seen so many successes. It isn't about the money. I mean, because we talked about the money a lot, and I don't want us to get stuck focusing on how much it costs, because the cost is a minor issue, to be honest. As you started to talk about, what we spend in other places on tax cuts and battleships and the military budget and so many other things, we could certainly solve this problem. It's just a matter of priority. Homeless people are at the bottom of the priority list, and that's why we've been in this crisis for more than 40 years.
So, with tiny houses, I guess you can offer ownership, right? I mean, a tiny house costs, how much does one of these tiny houses cost? And are they being, when people own them, I assume they take good care of them. Is that right?
Yes. And it varies. It depends on, there's a lot of different models of tiny homes. So that matters in the total cost, but they are definitely cost effective, probably about half of what it costs, or maybe even a third of, depending on where you're at in the country, of a traditional state home, as they call it.
Oh, sorry, can I weigh in on this?
So,
oh, please. Yes.
The one thing, the genius of Donald Whitehead is Donald never stays in one box, because he realizes how complicated this issue is, because the time it's going to take to actually construct housing units, you're going to have some kind of an intermediate step. And we're looking in the tiny homes in Charlotte, North Carolina. Some of the homes can cost $30,000 or below. I've seen videos where they have prefabricated tiny homes and they put them together for in 6 hours. We have lots of churches here who said, put the tiny homes on our property. There are people who are talking about trailer parks, communities as well, as long as they have services. So I like where Donald is going, which is be creative. in the process. Donald is right. It is not about the money. It costs a lot more money for someone to go to a drug and alcohol treatment center, to go into a hospital emergency room. And I actually, in the 90s, when I used to run Charlotte's transitional housing and jobs programs, I used to do cost-effective analysis, and it was always more cost-effective to house a person than to get them to this revolving door cycle of, you know, homelessness, which is, you know, for some, for the chronically homeless, it would be homeless shelter, bouncing off to a hotel, maybe committing a misdemeanor, going to jail in the county jail, then, you know, going to prison and then going back through the cycle again. And it's too expensive. In my experience, we had a 90% success rate in the Community Works Kendall Gill House program, named after the NBA basketball star. And once people who were formerly homeless saw they could get a job, they had decent clothes, they had regular meals, they had a regular doctor, they got therapy, counseling, transportation, we got them a job, they saved money. Then we got them into Section 8 housing. Now, this was when I was in my early 30s, and there's all kinds of programs across the country who have done this same model, and they're very successful. But you got to care about these people first. Where race comes into play, majority of people who are homeless in Charlotte are Black. And I think that, you know, this is hard to talk about, but it's very important that we be more honest as we discuss these issues. A lot of people in the city of Charlotte view homeless people who are poor and Black as not having a soul, not having any feelings. But I remember almost every night when I used to run the winter shelter, men would clutch Bibles to their chest. They would cry themselves to sleep. They used to ask me if this was a conspiracy by white people. And I said, yes, it is a conspiracy. And I had to be honest. Most of the men would wake up at 6:30 in the morning, wait for the labor pool. They came in to the shelter with tools and hard hats. And I am telling you, the majority of people of America, because of racism, structural racism, do not understand that the majority of homeless people don't want to be homeless. You got people with mental illness. They need treatment. They have drug and alcohol problems. They need treatment. Then there are a lot of people who are homeless who are learning disabled. So are we going to crush people with existing problems, crush them further into despair and depression, and grind them into poverty? It's inhumane. The people that you should be helping the most are the people that we're helping the least. And I know Donald knows this, because Donald spends a lot of his time going to homeless facilities, homeless encampments. He actually risked his life, actually, with COVID, because he's called me after I've called him to talk about people I was helping. They're putting people in hotels. You don't put a human being in a hotel. They're degrading. A lot of the women who I've dealt with living in the hotels, who went from the tent city to the hotels, one woman called me. She was so depressed, she stayed in her bed for a week. She doesn't want to go back to the shelter. She works full time. She has worked 15 years in fast food, made minimum wage. They are asking her to pay 3 months' rent in advance, and that's why she can't get an apartment. It is outrageous. I've often compared it to 21st century slavery. For some reason, it gets me in a lot of trouble. But once you become homeless, it is very hard to get off that plantation. And quite frankly, you know, how much more do Black people have to cruelty they have to experience in 400, you know, in a 400-year period? I'll close in saying, when I went to Albuquerque recently, the homeless people there were Hispanic and Native American.
Well, so
listen, but it's mainly people of color.
Well, you guys are fantastic. We could talk for another 2 hours here, but unfortunately, we only have about 2 minutes. Donald Whitehead and Joel Siegel, will you again give us your organizations? Tell people how to get in touch with you, and let's get this thing done. Donald, tell us about your launch and how people can get in touch with you. Give us a minute or two, and then we're going to have to move on out. But it's fantastic having you guys on. I'm honored. A tremendous exposition here. Donald, how do people get a hold of you? What do you want them to know about what they can do?
Sure. Donald Whitehead, National Coalition for the Homeless. If you want to email me directly, it's dwhitehead@nationalhomeless.org. And the phone number is 202-462-4822. email, again, is dwhitehead@nationalhomeless.org. What you can do, please, is join the National Coalition. The only way we're going to change things is if we organize and we make it known that homelessness should not be in existence in the richest country in the history of the world.
Absolutely. God, unbelievable. Joel Siegel, how do people get a hold of you?
Yeah, I'm Joel Siegel, Executive Director of the Justice Action Mobilization Network. Our organization is a part of the Bring America Home campaign. I'm a proud board member of the National Coalition for the Homeless. And today I want to make it clear I was speaking as Executive Director of the Justice Action Mobilization Network. To get a hold of me, it's real simple. Joel, J-O-E-L, .R. Siegel, S-E-G-A-L, @gmail.com. I would encourage everybody to go to the National Coalition for the Homeless website. National Coalition for the Homeless is spearheading this Bring America Home campaign to end homelessness and poverty. I'm just honored to be a part of it, and I thank God for Donald Whitehead, who I really believe is, in my opinion, is the best person in this country to end homelessness. I've seen him for 21 years, and I hope people will contribute to the National Coalition for the Homeless and contribute to the campaign.
Well, thank you both.
Thank
it's
you,
been
Jim.
An honor to have you on. This has been Harvey Slogo Wasserman with the Solartopia Green Power and Wellness Show on PRN. Thank you, our crew in New York. Much appreciated. We will be back again next week. We'll resume the Zoom calls and hopefully get another slot for shows like these with end homelessness. Remember, those people who are homeless are absolutely no different than the people who have homes. They're but for fortune. So you and I will see you next week at the Solartopia Green Power and Wellness Show. Thank you so much.
Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
Solartopia, Solartopia, Solartopia.